Cinéphile. Roslyn Hyams.
Hello, and thank you for joining me for this month's Cinéphile. Portal 30 is a debut feature from US director Daniel Lesovitz, set in New York, and Suhail Bembarker's Du Sable et du Feu, Sand and Fire, is his fourth feature film as a director and one of many more as a producer in a long cinema career.
Ça tourne. Cinéphile. RFI's main feature.
Selected for the Un Certain Regard, a particular view programme at the Cannes Film Festival, Portal 30 comes out in France on the same day this month as Cinéphile. Here's an extract.
You see that whole big city you got out there? That shit's for you. This shit right here, it's for me. For my sisters.
Okay, so what's your name?
Paul.
I'm Wei.
They need more mothers like me. I know I may look like a father, but I'm a mother by nature.
You met me at a ball. This is my family. You can't see things on just the surface level.
As well as being a bittersweet love story, it's a richly coloured film. Lesovitz has worked on a number of films handling the camera. Portal 30 stars 25-year-old transgender actress and model Lena Bloom, whose father was of African descent and her mother Filipino. Alongside Bloom, Fionn Whitehead, known for his major role in Dunkirk, Christopher Nolan's 2015 World War II hit.
Take one.
Here's Lena Bloom, who I met with Daniel Lesovitz at the Deauville American Film Festival, an annual cinema meet in the Normandy Resort in the northwest of France.
In this movie, we really touch on a lot of radical subjects that are very accurate and current in today's pop culture. We have interracial dating. We have a hetero man dating a trans woman. We have a conversation about homelessness. We have a conversation about, you know, homophobia, transphobia. You know, we're talking about so many parts of the world that keeps us separate. In this movie, it all comes together into one, and it's done in such a beautiful way with beautiful music and beautiful clothing. And, you know, it's really a self-expression of our full humanity. And I think that any person that will see this movie will be captured in a way that they can see themselves in it in some way, shape, or form, you know, even if it's just a little bit, or they know someone that has some characteristics of one of the characters in the movie. I think for me, why she exemplifies a lot of different women that I've grown to like know over the years, trans women and cisgender women, the same. So I think it's just a wow moment for the whole experience.
The title of the film, Portal 30, what does that mean for you? What does that evoke?
When I was in Chicago, I dropped out of high school when I was 17 because my school did not let me dance as a woman. I dropped out and I worked that summer to save up enough money to move to New York City. I took a Greyhound bus. It was $70. I took a one-way trip to New York City and I arrived at Port Authority. And I was 17 years old. I did not have anyone to meet me there. I did not know anyone in the city. And I just arrived with my red suitcase and I just went. I found myself. I went through things. I slept on trains. I ate pizza every day because that's the only thing I could afford because it was a dollar. And I learned that this is what I have to go through to get to where I want to be. And now, just a few years later, I'm doing a movie about that experience. And it's the life is telling me that everything that I was going through was worth it. And that is what life is about.
You didn't hesitate then. You accepted this role right away?
Absolutely. You know, I have a huge responsibility. There's a lot of women that have shared my experiences that have paved the way for me and given the opportunity to do a movie like this and to have it go all over this world. You know, it's amazing. And I still get messages from the women that I've grown to love and inspired by. And they say, thank you for keeping the lineage alive. Thank you for keeping the torch burning. So I think that's what it's about. When the people that have paved the way for me to be here can acknowledge that we are still going strong and it's getting better and better with representation.
Who are the women who've paved the way for you?
Tanae Ponvavis, Ojane Milan, Carmen Extravaganza, Tracy Africa, And the list goes on and on and on, you know, Crystal LaBeija, you know, these women were just wanted to live their life, want to be beautiful, want to be adored, want to be respected. And they were born in a time where they couldn't be. Yet now today we understand that it's very imperative to have these people in our life, in our community. And, you know, before there was the colonization, there was people that lived this life and was celebrated in our communities and is part of our ecosystem. And, you know, the idea of gender and femininity and masculinity has been literally deconstructed. And, you know, now we can have the conversation. And, you know, we have to acknowledge that there is a spectrum of gender and there's a spectrum of sexuality. And once we come in terms with that, we come in terms with our own identity.
Is it easier for someone like you, who's an actress and a model and who's a face known around the world?
I think it helps, but it took a lot of hard work to get here. It did not come easy. You know, before social media, you know, I was grinding and I was hustling and I dealt with homelessness and I've dealt with so many things that you see in the movie, what the family deals with, trying to pay your bills, don't know where your food's going to come from. And I think that those things build up courage inside you and build up experience inside you that propel you to be in positions like this, that if you work hard enough, it will pay off eventually. You got to keep going until you get exactly what you wanted. And I'm a very young woman.
You're 25, aren't
you? Yes, I'm 25 years old. I started when I was very young. My great-grandmother was a dance teacher, and she put me into dance classes. And, you know, from there, I went into an art school. And then from there, I moved to New York City. And then from New York City, I got into modeling. And from modeling, I got into acting. So there's levels and there's chapters that have to be written before you can achieve to the highest peak. No matter what your dream is, no matter what accomplishments you want to create for yourself, you can do it. You just have to stay dedicated.
Lena Bloom, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
The film was no less personal for Daniel Lesovitz.
I was aware of ballroom from the documentary Paris is Burning, which as a film student, we sort of watch in the U.S., and it's well-loved and well-regarded. But I didn't understand that the culture was as strong and as vibrant and still kind of living and growing in the same way, but with kind of a new generation of young participants. And I was processing this is a bit heavy, but I was processing the suicide of my father and having big questions about gender identity and family and all of these things. And I was invited to a ball. And in this moment, I found a respite, I think, from my own inner turmoil, how do you say, while watching some of the dancers. I don't know if it was, you know, voguing is a dance form that just incorporates personal narratives, and then it's transposed into dance moves, and everyone has their own style, and you see a lot of pain, you see a lot of beauty, you see a lot of what for me was the most compelling is transcendence. You see a transcendence of the body, and that can be a sort of feminine expression in a very masculine form, or, you know, all sorts of things. After it was over, I started speaking with a house mother, and they were sort of telling me about, you know, their role and what it was that they did for their children. And I understood that this was a chosen family, and there were aunts and uncles and nephews, and it was intergenerational. It made me rethink my associations with, say, genetics or the body or these inherited familial structures or inherited ideas of gender norms.
So Paul, played by Fionn Whitehead, is an alter ego, perhaps a bit like you entering that community.
Right. I mean, there are points of connection that I would have with Paul, one being, you know, I come from the Midwest. I understand sort of fragile family structures, not having been raised by my father, and also economic hardship and what that means. But I don't have necessarily male privilege, and I don't know what it means to be treated as a man, so I don't know what that feels or looks like. So there are parts that I identify with Paul, parts that I don't identify with Paul. I wanted to use the character of Paul as a way of studying for me, masculinity, because I'm often in sort of male spaces, I don't fit in. So Paul was there to study masculinity. And also, in the U.S., at least for me, I feel like the U.S. Is very rootless and in some ways like a marketplace. McCall Lombardi is an incredible actor, really was a pleasure to work with. And he represented for me how transactionary American culture can be. There's a lot of emphasis on status and on marketplace. And if you've been to countries outside of the U.S. or from different countries, it feels a bit strange somehow. So for me, in the heart of American culture, there's a lack of yearning for connection and unity and togetherness. And I think we're becoming aware of it culturally, especially now that the country's so divided. We're sort of like, okay, how can we find some sort of common ideals?
McCall Lombardi's role, it's quite brutal, but he also constitutes a family around him.
Right, exactly. Lee offers Paul a lot of protection from kind of the elements. He offers him a place to stay. He offers him, a way of kind of integrating himself into and having access to economic opportunity and things like this. But at the same time, it comes with conditions, and it comes with needing to other people, needing to say, this is us, these are the values that we ascribe to. And if you love, say, someone outside of this, or you want to participate in a culture that's, not acceptable to us, you on some ways have no place in this this hierarchy that we're creating. So, yeah.
Port Authority is a bit of a character in itself. It's the title of your film, and also a very important place in New York and for the community, the minorities that you're talking about.
Port Authority is a place where a lot of different people come to congregate. It's a place where a lot of queer youth of color, trans women would come to hang out, to work, to there's a lot of bars and places nearby that serve this community. So it's a central place in this community, but it's also a rootless place. It's also a place where people come to sort of maybe better their lives in New York. And the sense of transientness, it kind of comes and goes. It's a permanent thing, but the people who pass through the doors are new and different.
Daniel Lesovitz, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you so much.
Dans la vie, quand une chose n'est pas sérieuse, on dit c'est du cinéma. Pourquoi vous pensez qu'on ne prend pas le cinéma au sérieux?
Je ne sais pas, moi. Peut-être parce qu'on y va que quand tout va bien.
Cinéphile, Roslyn Hyams.
De Sable et du Feu of Sand and Fire has something of the good old swashbuckling adventures, high in drama and romance, somewhat exotic almost, the kind of films that came out in Technicolor from Hollywood and Cinecittà in Italy in the last century. Suhel Bembarka explains that as romanticised as the story is, or seems, the main characters, the spy Domingo Badia posing as Syrian Prince Ali Bey and Lady Esther Stanhope, are based on real people. Stanhope was a favourite of King George III, and her uncle was his Prime Minister, William Pitt.
Il y a eu un colloque sur lui à Rabat. C'est là que j'ai découvert qu'il s'appelait Domingo Badia. Je connais son histoire. Voilà.
I attended a talk about Prince Ali Bey in Rabat, and that was when I found out that he was called Domingo Badia and learned about his story. I thought, he sounds interesting, so I took a plane straight away to Paris because I knew I could find many interesting things in the libraries in that city. And indeed, that's where I found everything, or almost everything, about him and about Lady Esther. These two characters, I said, it's really worth it. They're out of the ordinary. And I began writing the screenplay with a French friend called Bernard Stora. Nobody knows them in Morocco. Apart from those few hundred people who were at the talk, he is completely unknown. I think the general public will find out about him through the film. A lot has been written about them. We only had to imagine what they said to each other. We added the dialogues, what they said to each other or Badia to the Sultan. But everything else is historical fact. It actually happened.
Je n'ai fait qu'ajouter des dialogues sur le personnage.
Éliminer le Sultan, votre Excellence ? Je suis un homme d'honneur. Capitaine Badia, vous êtes d'abord un soldat.
Dis-lui que je suis partie à Constantinople. Non, dis-lui que je suis morte.
Ben Barker also says that the story of a high-born English woman who becomes a religious fanatic and bloodthirsty queen of Palmyra, known to her followers as Maliki, is relevant today, where young people may take off and join jihadists in war in the belief that it is either their destiny or because they're lured by love or passion.
C'est pour ce motif que j'ai fait le film. C'est exactement ça. Je me suis rendu compte que 150 ans avant.
This is exactly why I made this film. 150 years ago, the same sort of thing went on. I think Lady Stanhope went to Syria because she thought the prince whom she had deeply fallen for had gone back there. In fact, the Spaniard posing as a Syrian prince was in prison because he had served the French Emperor Napoleon. If she hadn't met Badia, whom she thought was Ali Bey, she wouldn't have left. She was very popular at home. King George III had asked her to be Prime Minister to replace her ailing uncle, William Pitt.
Le roi voulait nommer Lady Esther Premier Ministre.
Votre protégé, Talleyrand, est-ce un génie ou un fou?
Take 87.
Well, that's it for this month's Cinephile. Join me, Roslyn Hyams, at the end of October. Thank you for listening, and until next time, goodbye.
On est pas bien, là?